Hi, this is Pastor Mike from the Gospel Church. You're listening to our podcast. It's my hope that as you listen to it, that you'll fall deeply in love with Jesus and that you trust him with every part of your life. Thanks for listening.
If you have a copy of the scriptures, why don't you turn with me to Mark chapter 13? We're in Mark chapter 13 today, and I think that our text today is really important for us as we live our life in 2020. One of the things I know about our culture is that we are a culture that is very prone to being afraid of the future. And this season that we're in right now is a season that I find that many of us are afraid as we look towards the future. In fact, you can look no farther than what's happened this past week with the coronavirus, right? I mean, it's not a conversation that we were having in 2020 without mentioning the coronavirus. And this week, I saw so many of us kind of get freaked out by it. In fact, you saw the stock market kind of go down, which doubled the anxiety, right? People are then worried not just only about like their health, but also about their money. And so there's this kind of like anxiety towards the future that kind of just comes up within this. In fact, I was at Costco this Friday because I like going to Costco on Fridays. It's my day off and I have my daughter Georgia with me. And so we have something, we need to do something. And so Costco is a great place to get free samples. And so we were kind of cruising around looking for a Costco sort of things and trying as many samples as we could. And then when I went to check out, I just noticed that there were a lot of people like buying things that look like bunker provisions. And I was talking to the guy as I was checking out. He's like, man, we've sold more toilet paper than we've ever sold in the history of Costco, like yesterday and today. Like, it's insane. Like, people are terrified of the coronavirus. And so what they're doing to stock up is they're trying to buy toilet paper, which is hilarious, by the way. I just, of all the things, toilet paper. But it's true, right? Like, there's this kind of fear that we have towards the future, specifically towards things like this virus that's out there. And I think Jesus' words that he spoke 20 years ago have great meaning for us today, specifically about anxiety and about where all this is going and about how we should operate in times that seem very uncertain, okay? So we're going to be looking at that today out of Mark chapter 13. So look with me in your text. We're going to read 23 verses. It's a long reading today, but I want you to hang with me. And here's what I'm going to give you permission to do. I'm going to give you permission to write in your Bible today. Now, you might think that that's sacrilegious. I personally think that the Bible is something we should absorb into our life. And one of the things that helps me absorb information and concepts most is actually by highlighting things that I find that are interesting, putting question marks, just kind of interacting with things. And so it's okay. You can buy another Bible if you want one that's completely pristine. But this one today, you can highlight some stuff, underline things that you think are really interesting as we walk through this, because there's going to be a lot of questions if you really engage with this text today that you're going to be thinking about as you read this, because this is really interesting, because Jesus starts talking about prophecy, and the end of the world. Let me just tell you something that Christians love to talk about. We like talking about the end of the world. Like, I don't know why, right? But like, you start talking about Revelation, Antichrist, end times, people are like, sign me up. I want to learn about that. So today and next week, we're going to be looking at Jesus and prophecy, specifically how we're supposed to live in a time that's uncertain as the future. So chapter 13, verse 1 says this. As he was going out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, this is Jesus, one of the disciples said to Jesus, teacher, look, what massive stones, what impressive buildings. Jesus said to him, do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left upon another. All will be thrown down. While he was sitting on the Mount of Olives across from the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, tell us, when will these things happen? And what will be the sign when all these things are about to be accomplished? Jesus told them, watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name saying, I am he, and they will deceive many. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. These things must take place, but it is not yet the end. For nation will rise up against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places and famines. These are the beginning of birth pains. But you be on your guard. They will hand you over to local courts, and you will be flogged in the synagogues. You will stand before governors and kings because of me as a witness to them. And it is necessary that the gospel be preached to all nations. So when they arrest you and hand you over, don't worry beforehand what you will say, but say whatever is given to you at that time, for it isn't you speaking, but the Holy Spirit. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father's child. Children will rise up against parents and have them put to death. You will be hated by everyone because of my name, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. When you see the abomination of desolation standing where it should not be, let the reader understand. Then those in Judea must flee to the mountains. A man on the housetop must not come down or go in to get anything out of his house, and a man in the field must not go back to get his coat. Woe to pregnant women and nursing mothers in those days. Pray that it won't happen in winter. For those days will be days of tribulation, the kind that hasn't been from the beginning of creation until now and never will be again. If the Lord had not cut those days short, no one would be saved. But he cut those days short for the sake of the elect whom he chose. Then if anyone tells you, see, here's the Messiah, see there, do not believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will rise and perform signs and wonders to lead astray, if possible, the elect. And you must watch. I have told you everything in advance. Now, here in this text, we find Jesus revealing how we're supposed to live in light of uncertainty and really difficult times. In fact, times much tougher than ours, if we're really going to be honest. And yet we're going to find three principles today we're going to be looking at that are really important for us when it comes to how to see the world, to perceive it, like our worldview, and then also how to live it, not just see it, but live it. How are we supposed to live in times that bring great anxiety to us? And the very first one of them is this, is that God is never surprised. God is never surprised. I want you to say that with me. Today we're going to do something different. We don't do this all the time, but I want you to say this with me because I think we need to like own this. God is never surprised. Okay, that was like pretty good, but here's the deal. Like, we struggle doing this together. So let's just say it together. God is never surprised. All right, we can do that. God is never surprised. And the reason I want us to say that is because we get surprised, right? We're like, what happened? This isn't how my life was supposed to go. And it's important for us to remember that God is not surprised. He's not like, oh, I didn't see that coming in your life. So what happened? I'm shocked. I'm absolutely verklempt. I have no idea what just happened. That's not God, ever. God is never surprised. And here you find Jesus saying something that surprises his disciples, in fact, throws them for a loop, but Jesus isn't surprised by it. So look back in verse 1. We find Jesus, as he's walking through the temple, being told by one of his disciples, verse 2, says, "Teacher, look, what massive stones, what impressive buildings." What the disciple is looking at is he's looking at the temple complex, and it is a massive complex. It is unlike anywhere else in the ancient world. In fact, if you go to Israel today, you can see just a glimpse of it. When you see the retaining wall of the Western Wall, you see these massive stones. And they built it without concrete. They built it without cranes. They built it out without machinery. They built this incredible temple complex. And the people of Israel are very, very proud of it. And Jesus says something surprising. You know what he says? He says, all this is going away. In fact, it's going to get so torn down that there's not going to be one stone on top of another. Now, can you imagine hearing this if you're one of the disciples? In fact, they come to him later and go, hey, tell us when this is going to happen, because it's shocking to them. Like, this is the the centerpiece of their identity as Jews, and it's all going away. They've just rebuilt the thing. In fact, it was all destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar in 586 BC, and now they've kind of rebuilt it, and they're like, hey, we're back, baby. We've got like this awesome temple. God is going to do his thing. And Jesus is like, hey, the whole thing's going to get knocked down. And so you find here a surprise, but God is never surprised. In fact, the last verse that we see, verse 23, is what? Go skip all the way back to the end of what we just read. Jesus says, you watch, I've told you everything in advance. Why? Because he's not surprised. And so as we look at this text, it's important for us to know is that God knows the future. God holds the future. He knows what's happening. He's never going to be surprised. You find Jesus giving us some prophecy here. Now, I think it's important for us to understand how to read prophecy, because like when you read something like this, you're like, so how does this work? How does this all happen here? Is some of this coming in our future? Is some of this in the past? And how does that work together? And like, how much time is between these events? And these are all really good questions. So what you find here is that prophecy is tricky to read. In fact, that's not a newsflash to anybody, but prophecy is pretty tricky to read. Sometimes there's great imagery. Sometimes words that we think are meant one way are really meant in a different way. And often, until it's done, then we look back and go, oh, it all makes sense, because we can see how it worked from where we're standing now that it's already happened. But what you find here is that there's something I call the mountain effect when it comes to prophecy. See, Jesus, when he's saying this, he's saying it from the vantage point that it hasn't happened yet. And so a lot of the events are seemingly really close together. Kind of like when you look at a mountain range. Have you been to the Front Range before? If you've gone out to Colorado, gone to Boulder, or gone to Denver, you'll notice the spectacular Front Range. You can see it from the airport. So it's really hard to miss, right? It's just this huge range of mountains. In fact, I've got a picture here for you. And when you're looking at the mountains, one of the things that's so striking about it is that they look like they're all on top of each other, right? They look like they're really close together. But when you get to the top of the nearest mountain, you realize that there's a whole gap, huge amount of space between the mountaintop you're standing on and the one that's next. And the same thing is true with prophecy. Often when you read it in the text, you read it from the perspective of the one who's hearing it and their perspective looking into the future. But some of these events have already taken place. And that's what we're seeing here in Mark chapter 13. There are two key prophecies that Jesus gives. One we're looking at this week, which is the destruction of the temple. And that has already taken place in 70 AD. And then next week, we're going to look at the second coming of Christ, which is still a future event and a hope that we have. And we're stuck in the valley between those two mountaintops, between those two peaks of history. The destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, which is what Jesus is talking about here when he says, hey, all these stones are going away. The temple's being destroyed. A time of incredible hardship is coming. He is speaking about their future, but it is our past. And then he turns his sights towards the second coming, which is still in our future and is our hope. Do you see that? So next week, we're going to be talking about what's coming for us. Here, we're going to see a model of how we're supposed to live in a season of incredible suffering. But it's important for us to realize, as we're in the middle of our struggle, sometimes we can't see beyond it. We can't see past where we're at. We need to remember what? That God is never surprised. Now, if we just ended it there, then that would be kind of like, okay, that's great, but I still don't know if it's going to turn out okay for me, right? God's not surprised, but is he sadistic? He's like, I'm going to put you through some tough times, and you just got to go through it. But that's not what we see in the Bible. What we see is that God always provides. So you guys want to say that one with me? God always provides. God always provides. And that's important for us to realize, is that God does not leave us alone in our times of struggle. What you find is that God always provides for you and me. And you see that here in this text. He provides for his people in two ways. One, he gives them a heads up, okay? He gives them a heads up. He says, be on guard. There is a time of struggle that is coming. And you find it here. He gives them like actually a really key indicator. If you want to look with me in verse 14, you find him saying when they're supposed to leave the city. So it says this. It says, when you see the abomination of desolation standing where it should not be, let the reader understand, then those in Judea must flee to the mountains. And he gives a bunch of like advice on how to do that. Like if you're on top of your roof, don't even go in the house. Just leave right away. If you see this, just if you're in a field, don't go back and get your coat. Just go. And what he's pointing to here is he's pointing to an event that's going to happen in the temple that they're supposed to just be mindful of. And it's an event that happens over and over again in the Bible. It's, in fact, one of the things you find is it seems that there's almost like this repetitive nature of events that happen that are very similar to each other. The abomination of desolation is one of those. So that's a phrase that you're going to see if you're reading the Bible, specifically when it comes to prophecy. Daniel talks about it first, the prophet Daniel. And the abomination that causes desolation was an event that happened before Jesus' birth. There was a man named Antiochus Epiphanes, who's supposedly one of the most evil men that's ever lived. And people call him a foreshadowing of the Antichrist. Antiochus Epiphanes was a general. He was someone who kind of followed out of Alexander the Great's line. And he was a ruler of modern-day Syria. And he hated God. And one day he entered into the temple. He conquered Jerusalem, entered in the temple. And to show in his mind that God didn't exist, he took a pig, which is a defiled animal, and sacrificed it on the altar of the Lord. That's what they call the abomination that causes desolation. That a pig's blood was shed where only the lamb of clean animals, the blood of clean animals could be shed. And Jesus is pointing back to that and saying, there's going to be an event that's going to be similar to that that's coming. In the temple, there's going to be an abomination that's going to be put there, and it's going to cause desolation. And that abomination was a symbol of the Roman emperor that was going to be placed in the temple courts. It's an abomination of the Lord. And Jesus is saying, when you see it, you better get out of town. God is providing for his people. And what happens is that when Jerusalem falls in 70 AD, the entire city is wiped out. There's a massive crime against humanity that happens there, where everybody who's Jewish is herded up, and many of them are executed. They're crucified by Titus, who's the Roman general who comes in and stomps out a big revolution of the Jewish people. And the city of Jerusalem no longer is a Jewish city. And for almost 2,000 years, is no longer the center of Christianity and is no longer the center of the Jewish faith. It is in the hands of other people. But God's church remains because God provides what they need. He gives them information, and the church leaves before this happens and goes to the nations. So you find stories of the Apostle Thomas leaving Jerusalem before the destruction and going all the way out to Ethiopia. I'm sorry, not all the way out to Ethiopia, all the way out to India. And there's historical records of him going there and preaching the gospel. You find Paul, when he leaves the area, he's already seeing gospel fruit in other places. You find just an incredible work of God as this persecution happens because he's warned them, the people leave before the destruction of the city. But secondly, you find that God is going to provide what they need. If you look with me in verse 11, Jesus has warned them that there's going to be arrests, that people are going to hate them, that they're going to be brought before kings, and they're going to be beaten, and there's all kinds of personal struggle that's going to happen to them. And he says this, he says in verse 11, so when they arrest you and hand you over, don't worry beforehand what you will say, but say whatever is given to you at that time, for it isn't you speaking, but the Holy Spirit. Jesus says, listen, when things get really tough, just know that I'm going to give you what you need to say in that time. Even though it might be incredibly difficult for you, I'm going to be with you. So don't worry about what you're going to say, how you're going to defend yourself, because the Holy Spirit himself will speak through you. I'm going to provide. And throughout the Bible, we see God providing for his people over and over and over again, God provides for his people. In fact, one of the most important events that happened in human history was God bringing his people out of Egypt, right? And God provides salvation for his people by first sending Moses and the plagues to bring them out of captivity, later providing for them an escape from the Egyptians when they chased them by splitting open the Red Sea. And they passed through on dry land. Once they get on the other side, they're hungry. God provides for them food and water in the form of manna and quail. God provides for his people. He continually walks with them through the midst of their struggle. And the same thing is true for you. There will be times where you're saying, I didn't see this coming. I'm going through incredible hardship. I'm struggling, and that might be a physical hardship. It might be an emotional hardship. You might be going through a season where you're like, I don't know what you're doing, God, but I feel incredibly alone. I feel depressed. I feel anxious. God will provide. You might be going through a season of incredible financial strain. God sees it, and God will provide. You may not be rich, but God provides for his people. God provides. That is his role. He is a provider. He cares for his children. And just like any good dad, you want to give your children what they need, right? It's a pretty poor dad that doesn't take care of his children. That's the image God gives us of himself, that he is a good father who provides for his kids. So if you're in a moment today where you're like, I'm in a season that's incredibly difficult, just know that God will provide. But lastly, you know what God does? He redeems. Jesus redeems. This is our last thing today. I want you to say it with me. Jesus redeems. I want you to say it one more time because this is something that I think we need to own today. Jesus redeems. Say it. Jesus redeems. And the reason I didn't put a qualifier behind that is because Jesus is in the business of redeeming. He redeems people. He redeems stories. He redeems brokenness. He redeems pain. Jesus uses things that are really, really difficult for good and for his glory. Our pain often proclaims more than we know because Jesus uses our most difficult circumstances for his glory. You may say, where do you say that in this text? Well, I'll show you. If you look with me in verse 9, look at what Jesus says. He says, but you be on your guard. They will hand you over to local courts and you'll be flogged in the synagogues. You'll stand before governors and kings because of me as a witness to them. So he says, hey, things are going to be hard for you if you're going to follow me. There's going to be times that you're going to be flogged. You're going to be handed to the courts. You'll stand before governors and kings. There's going to be people judging you and your life. And then he goes on to say this in verse 10, which is really important. It almost seems like a throwaway line, but it's not. It's the heart of the entire text. It's what God is doing. Verse 10, Jesus says, and it is necessary that the gospel be preached to all nations. Do you see what Jesus says? He says, it is necessary. When Jesus says something is necessary, better believe he means business, right? He says, why? Why is all this happening? Because it is necessary for the gospel to be proclaimed. Your life is not your own. Your life is something God is using to proclaim the gospel, the good news of Jesus to all the nations. Your life is not yours. It does not belong to you. If you're in Christ, it belongs to Jesus. And he will use it as he sees fit to proclaim his glory. But remember, he's never surprised. He always provides, and he's going to redeem it. He will not waste you. He will not ruin you for no reason. He will not bring pain or hardship in your life without purpose. But God will proclaim through your life. See, this is the thing, is God has an incredible purpose for you. And the purpose for you is to be someone who declares that God is infinitely good. And sometimes that means we have to go through really hard times or we may be afraid, but we have to remember that God already knew that it was going to happen and he's going to provide for us and he's going to redeem it. And sometimes that truth, that future hope that God's going to do that in our future is what allows us to continue moving forward, because we know that in the midst of all this is that God deeply knows what it feels like to go through pain and go through fear of the future. And you might say, that sounds like really, really radical of a claim. Like, how can you say that, Mike? Well, the thing we know about God is that God did not stay at a distance watching us go through this life, but instead in Jesus, he entered into our story. See, these three things we find throughout the entire Bible. When God created the world perfect and created men and women to glorify him alone, and then we turned on him and rebelled against him, God was not surprised. He was not like, wow, I made Adam and Eve, and like, they didn't go a generation, and they're already against me. God wasn't like, well, that went poorly. I should have chained up Satan a little bit more. Like, how did he get out? Like, I didn't see this coming. God was never surprised. And Jesus was not surprised when he went to the cross. It wasn't like, wow, that escalated quickly. I was preaching one day in the temple. The next day, I'm executed on the cross. What happened? No. In fact, the Bible tells us it is according to his plan that he came. And even though Satan had some plans, God had greater ones. Because God is not surprised. But then God provides. And he provides in the very best way. Not by sending an angel to do work for God, not by sending just an ordinary person to come and be a great example, but he sent himself, he sent Jesus to come live a perfect life, not just to be a perfect example, but to be a perfect sacrifice. And he gave himself for us because what? God provides. And that's what you see throughout the Old Testament. You see Abraham bringing his son to be sacrificed on an altar. God tells Abraham to go bring Isaac, the son of the promise, to an altar to die. And in the middle of it, you're going, what is God doing? Like, God, how can you sacrifice a son for no reason? Like, what kind of God is that? And as Abraham lays his son Isaac on the altar, God provides. And God says, don't kill your son. Look, there is a lamb that is caught in a thicket, and I want you to take it and have that lamb take the place of your son. And on this mountain, we're going to say, it will be provided. And on that very same hill, 4,000 years later, another son was laid out on an altar. But this time, there was no lamb because the son was the lamb. There was no one taking the son off the altar because God had put his own son on the altar because God provided hope. Because what happens next? God redeems. God brings broken people to himself through his provision, through the cross. And this is what the gospel is that is preached, that we can trust this kind of Jesus. The reason the gospel matters is because Jesus invites us to trust him. In fact, the ultimate message of the gospel is simply to trust Jesus, to not trust yourself and your goodness or what you have or the connections you have or how holy you can be or the things you won't do and the things you will do. It's not about your performance. It's about knowing and trusting Jesus, saying he redeems, he provides, and he sees me. And in the midst of all this, God is telling a beautiful story. And he's telling your story in the middle of all of this, where he's saying, you get to enter into this story. And now as you live holding this truth where God is not surprised and God provides and he's going to redeem, that in the midst of fear, you get to be a light where you can say, listen, I don't care if the virus is coming. Why? Because at its worst, I might die. But I have a future hope that can't be taken away from me. That's powerful, right? At its worst, I may lose everything in the stock market. It may go away, but ultimately, I know that there's someone who will provide more than the U.S. Treasury. Because I've got a father who's got a cattle on a thousand hills, and he will never neglect me. Ultimately, when you feel the pressure and the pain of feeling loss, a personal loss, you may feel like your world is ending. Maybe it's a breakup or a parent passed or a future hope of yours has just kind of gone away. In the midst of that, you need to know that God is not surprised, and he's going to provide, and he's going to redeem your story. In the midst of all this, this is what makes Christians different, is that our hope is not here. It's not in what we bring to the table. It's not how good we are. Our hope is that we follow Jesus, who says that he's going to be with us. One of my favorite stories that I love to tell my children is the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three young men were young men that lost everything. They lived in Jerusalem, and a king named King Nebuchadnezzar came, and he took them in captivity, the same guy that destroyed the temple the very first time. He brought them out of their hometown and put them in another city with another culture and another way of doing things, and they had everything that they thought was comfortable in their life just stripped away from them. And one day, things got worse because the king decided that he was going to try to make sure that everybody worship the state, which was him. He wanted to make sure that everybody was like in line with the right kind of thinking and the right kind of action. So he created a statue, and he said, here's the deal. We want to show that everybody has allegiance to me and that they follow me. So I want everybody, when the music plays, I want them to bow down to this statue. And if you do it, I know that you're loyal to the state. Now, that sounds crazy, but it's not that crazy when you look at totalitarian regimes, right? And so he's like, hey, when the music plays, you guys need to like honor me and honor the government. So if you guys don't do that, I just want you guys to know that anybody who doesn't do this, we're going to throw them in a furnace and you're going to die. So you can like just bend your knee, even if you don't feel like it, just do it. Or I'm going to send you into a big furnace and you're going to die in the heat and the flames, and it's going to be terrible. So just choose wisely, right? Now, can you imagine feeling that pressure? You're like, none of us want the furnace, right? None of us want the struggle. None of us want the pain. We're like, I mean, what's the worst that could happen? I should just bow my knee. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, we're not going to do that. Why? Because we think that God's not surprised by this. He's never surprised. God's going to provide, and we think he's going to redeem the situation. So we're going to just be faithful. So the music plays. Everybody's on their face except for three dudes. Like, we're not doing it. Now, think about that. That's got to be like the most awkward situation ever, right? King's like, you guys, what are you doing? We're going to do it again, and you can try it again. So repeat, play the music. Everybody falls down on their face again, except for the three young men who are like, we're not doing this. And so the king brings them to him and says, I don't think you get the severity of the situation you're finding yourselves in. If you don't bow, you're going into the furnace. And they say something that is so subversive and powerful and yet filled with hope. You know what they say to him? They say, king, here's the deal. We think you're the king. We're not denying that. But we think that there's a greater king. And he's told us not to bow to images and only give him our ultimate authority. We're going to be good citizens, but here's the deal. You got to figure this out, king. If you want us to die, that's fine. We'll go to the fire. And if our God is real, he can save us. But even if he doesn't, we're still not bowing the knee. He can save us if he wants, because he's not surprised by this, and he can provide, and he can redeem it. But even if he doesn't, he's still worthy of it. And so the king throws him in the fire. And you would think that's the end of the story. Young men stand up against power, get thrown into the fire, they die. Everybody forgets about it. We just move on. But that's not what happens. As they're in the fire, the king comes and looks and realizes that they're not dead. They're walking around, like hanging out in the fire. And as they're hanging out in the fire, he goes, hey, didn't we throw three people in that fire? There's actually a fourth one who didn't count right. And then he looks closer and he goes, no, that fourth one, he looks like the Son of God. He realizes there's something really different about this fourth person that's in there. And what we believe as Christians and as theologians, we believe that the fourth person is probably the incarnate Christ. That Christ came himself to enter into this situation with them and provide for them and redeem it. And so the king opens the gates of the furnace and says, come on out. And he says, there is no other God than the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. My hope would be for us as a community is that we'd be that kind of person that says, God, we're going to follow you. It doesn't matter what's next. I know that there's anxiety and I feel it, but I'm going to trust that you know about it and you're not surprised. And I'm going to trust that you actually can provide for me in the midst of this. And when I do that, you're going to redeem the situation and all people are going to see that you're worth following as I allow this current situation to be a moment where people get to see the presence of the living God. And I know that because you said, I'm never going to be alone. So as we close, I just want to leave that in front of you. Would you just say, Jesus, right now, every eye closed, like, let's just take a moment, just say, Jesus, there's something inside my heart that I'm feeling the weight of the world about. And I know probably every single one of us has that. It could be some kind of fear that we have, an anxiety that we have about the future, an uncertainty, something that's beyond our control, and it keeps us up at night. It's frustrating us. It's making us deeply afraid. And in the middle of this moment, I want you to consider the fact, as we've said over and over again, that God is not surprised that it's there. We just contemplate that. Secondly, I want you to consider that Jesus says that he's a provider. One of my favorite things, going back to the story of God's people going out to the wilderness, is that God provides for his people because he does not send them out to the wilderness to starve. He sends them there so they'll know that they're his children. And God will provide for you. You may not see where it's coming, but he has not abandoned you. If you're his, he loves you. So you may just need to claim that today. Like, I believe that God is for me. I believe that he is with me. The psalmist says, King David says, I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. He's declaring that because he does not feel it, but he claims that he will see that God will provide. So maybe today your faith just needs to grow and say, God's going to provide for me. But lastly, redemption. That's our hope. That God is going to redeem this broken world. That he's going to come back. And he's going to make all things new. And it is that hope right there that we have to hold on to. Because we know that this world is not it. It is not heaven. But heaven is coming soon. And so we hope for it. We have that hope that's within us, that rises up within you. And when you show that hope, that this world is not it, but you are waiting for heaven, and the gospel is proclaimed to all nations. Jesus, we trust you. We trust you. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Gospel Church podcast. Before you go, please hit subscribe. And if you want to give to support the mission, please hit the link in the description. We'll see you next week.